Jazz, how you doing, buddy? I feel like I haven't talked to you in a while.
Yeah, I've missed your calls.
What is new? How's training?
Yeah, good.
Doing good?
Work. Yeah, I've been still working hard on the mobility front. I've tried to perfect the technique before going on the bulk and getting stronger and stuff. So I'm
What seems to
nearly
be the issue with mobility?
there. Hips. I've got like kind of tight hips. So I'm kind of a lot of my training was like, well, when I got on the program with Andrew, it's kind of like a lot of golf related stuff. So been kind of loosening up the hips. My ankles lacked a little bit of mobility. So been working on the squat and getting some depth and stuff now. So almost
Yeah.
there.
Awesome, man. I remember I was talking to one of my friends, and he's a big golfer, and he's also, sadly, he's an overthinker. So probably isn't a good combination being a
It's probably me a
overthinker.
little bit though.
And we were talking about everything to do with golf, right? And it was just funny because like when I was talking to him about like how bodybuilding, you can actually use it as like a way to kind of look at golf, he was like looking at me like fountain of information, give it to me. And I was like, well, it doesn't mean it's right. I said, it's just these are things to consider. And he was like, no, but this is good. This is really cool. So then he went the next day and said that he I think it was like the first day he went back to play golf, but because he was thinking about what I'd given him, just in terms of like hip internal rotation, how his foot was moving, he was like, my body doesn't work. And I was like, okay, that's cool. And then a couple of days later, he retested and he was like, I was able to make huge progress on things that he normally thought were just like bad drives or just bad
Yeah.
positions for him. So it was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's exactly kind of what I'm working on is like getting that mobility like instantly helps your golf swing. It can get you in positions that are a natural movement, I guess. Whereas you're making all these compensations in the swing, like there's just no way you can execute them efficiently. So
100%, man.
it's
And it's
very
like
relatable.
it's very humbling when you're in a sport like that, where it's primarily compiled of just movement efficiency, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Sorry, I'm just gonna message some of my clients just about the call right now to make sure we're getting people, because it's right now it's a really small group. Bum, 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 bum. Who else is in here? Mike, are you new, buddy? Sarah just said that there's somebody who was new who just popped on the call. Was that you?
Yeah, I'm brand new.
Oh, awesome. When'd you start?
Yesterday.
Oh, really?
Signed up yesterday, so loading everything in today. Yep.
Very cool. Where did you kind of like find muscle intelligence or Ben? Where did you first kind of intersect?
I think it was through Instagram. I was online just seeing some posts, things like that. And then this was the 35 and over webinar he just did on, I think it
Okay.
was there or something.
Very cool. That's awesome, man. Who's your coach?
Chris Fudge.
You'll
Yep.
like him. It's awesome. Chris is the OG. What's the major goal you guys are gonna start working on?
Body recomp. So lose fat, maintain muscle, gain muscle at the same time.
Awesome. And what was your background, like athletically or just in fitness?
So honestly, really military and fire department my whole life. That's about it.
Oh,
So
really?
I didn't play. I played a little bit of rugby in high school, but I didn't play many sports in high school.
Okay, very cool. That's awesome, man. Well, you don't have to, right? Like, I never even got involved in fitness until I was like 20, I want to say like 26, 25,
Yeah.
maybe not even. And whenever I tell Ben this story, he always laughs at me because I'm like, yeah, before that, my diet was like cigarettes and vanilla Coke. And he's always laughing. Like, how did you do this? And I'm like, right,
Right.
the shift. Yeah, it's pretty wild. Al, how you doing, man? I haven't seen you on a call yet. Again, granted, I haven't really been here very many times myself lately, but are you new to the program as well?
Am. Yeah, I'm doing well.
Awesome, man.
All
Who's your coach?
good. Coach Andrew.
Andrew? Awesome. Andrew's awesome. He could tell me he couldn't be here tonight as well. So like I was saying, it's gonna be a small group. What was your goal with Andrew? How long have you been with him?
June 4th, so coming up on 5 months.
How are things going?
Yeah, real good. My primary goal was to dial into my nutrition, and I race competitively. I do Spartan races and trail races, so it's really just to dial in my overall athletic performance as back in June, just to gear up for the whole racing season and championship end of year races, which is fast approaching. So it's been
Very
good.
cool.
It's been fun
That's
working through
awesome.
a couple rolled ankles, but Andrew with his football background and just all his expertise has been helping me with mobility and recovery and box jumps and all kinds of good stuff. So
That's awesome.
things are on the mend.
And have you noticed improvements in like your trail running and all that stuff? The athletic part?
I have, yeah. It's been all across the board, all positive.
Awesome, that's awesome. I remember this is a random story. I was taking this course a long time ago. It was like Good Life. Good Life is like major corporate chain gym in Canada, and I was we were learning about like the hips, ankles, feet stuff. And I don't know if it's real or not. It's one of those things where maybe it was like a group placebo effect. But the guy was talking about rolling ankles, right? And he was saying about how many people roll their ankles because they have long toenails. And he was
Huh.
saying what happens is the toenails, something about the toenails, I can't remember what he was saying, but it has to do with like the nervous system. When a person wears, typically cleats because they're in football, right? They're tight. And what happens is the toenails butt up against like the head of the shoe. And it actually does something with like excessive ankle movement. It almost like turns that part off. And so we did this test where he'd have you like sit out like that, where he had your leg on his lap and he had the foot, and he was basically doing like a torsion test, like an resistance there, or rotations, right? And then he would bop the person's toenails and then do it again, and the person's ankle just failed. And I'm like, that is so weird. That's the coolest thing ever, though. But like, and then it was like, I guess we gotta cut our toenails. Because
Yeah.
Please saying, like, it's very possible that it's it, but again, who knows? It might be one of those things where just everybody was in this group think mentality that they just started being like, oh, this is real now. But yeah, it's really cool stuff.
Pretty wild.
So I think we're gonna have a pretty small group here, guys, which I hope more people hop in. But yeah, so I haven't been on these calls for a little while because I got sick a little while back. I'm not sure you guys ever had a whooping cough, but it kicked my butt. I have three kids that are right now trying to kill themselves upstairs, so I'm glad they have calmed down at least enough for me to be audible. But it's yeah, it's been a little while since I've been on these calls, as Des would know. So I'm glad to be back. One of the coaches here, my name is Steve, and yeah, I work with VAMSHI. Actually, not a lot of my clients are right now on the call. So Chaz is here. Yeah, so I've got two people on the call myself. But yeah, one of the things that I always try to do when I'm coming on these calls is bring not only some information that you guys would find valuable, but hopefully some tangible and applicable information that you guys can hopefully take into your literal next workout or your recovery or whatever it is that you're trying to optimize for. Okay. So the topic I wanted to go over was essentially trying to optimize for the gym and then recovery outside of the gym. So the hour in the gym, the 23 hours out of the gym. Now, this is like a massive conversation, so we're not going to go over that because we'll be here for the next 26 weeks. But we can pick up a couple of things that I think kind of high impact and really just really beneficial for you guys to tackle. So again, we're all kind of small group right here, so I don't mind if you guys just unmute yourself and just kind of chat and just spew what you got at me. But what I'd like to know, because this is what I'm kind of going off of, is I'd like to know what you guys think. Or what maybe we feel is like a hindrance for you building muscle. And I don't want you to think outside the gym. I want you to think right now inside the gym. So if there's something like, and it could be like a problem body part, it could be like a troubling pain you haven't got over, just anything that you're individually experiencing that might be just like something that's holding you back from getting next level results in the gym, what would it be? I'll give you guys a minute or so just to think about it. And then you can just unmute yourself or you can type it, whatever you want.
I've got a couple that I've kind of encountered recently.
Shoot him in.
One is like when I'm doing like the dumbbell row, or even like the Bulgarian squat. If I don't square my pelvis, or I don't like square my, like I find it hard to contract my lat, for example. Like if I'm loading the right leg, I
Right.
feel pretty comfortable on the right leg, and I can square my body and pelvis, and I can contract the lat. But if I go on my left side, I'm not as stable on the left side, and I can't square my pelvis as well, and then I feel like that affects my movement. And that kind of goes throughout the whole board, Bulgarian split squat, and like a bunch of other exercises. If I can square my pelvis and more conscious of it, I feel like I can get better contractions in the movements, whereas I
Okay.
can get a little bit sloppy at times.
So are you feeling that you're actually like not getting the muscular development that you should be getting in those areas, like lats and glutes?
I don't necessarily think it's muscular development. I think it's just the mobility side of things. Because I lack that mobility and awareness of how my pelvis is supposed to move or how certain body parts are supposed to move, it's more like an exploration phase. So I'm kind of like still exploring that, because the muscular side is been working pretty well. So it's just kind of being more comfortable and familiar, I guess, doing the exercises.
Okay. So yeah, so Des, just as an example right now, like I'm asking this question right now so I can get this, like whatever it is you're dealing with in the top of your mind, right? So just hold that there, and so that as we kind of go through this, you'll be able to understand why I asked, because that's perfect. What you just gave me is an exact perfect example of what I'm going to talk about. Anybody else that have anything else that like they're either experiencing now, have been experiencing? Again, it can be pain, it can be just troubling muscles, it can be movement like Des has. Go for it up.
Steve, I've had lingering pain. It probably like dates back 8 years ago. I was diagnosed with just tendinosis, golfer's elbow in my left elbow. So that's just been lingering. I've had different types of like PT and red light and all kinds of different therapies on it. Never had surgery, although that's what one acupuncturist here in San Francisco told me one time, and that like freaked me out. I was like, I'm not going under the knife. But so through PT, I've learned several different exercises with like the voodoo band and really just causing some acute stress and damage to it, which to stimulate blood flow. And just over the years, like I'll get complacent because it feels good, and then banging out like whatever it is, a lot of gripping and pulling, like pull-ups, and it'll start to flare up, and then I'll just go back and revert back to my exercises, and then it gets better. So it's sort of cyclical. It's just one of those things where it's something I've learned to live with. And
Okay.
perfect timing. It's starting to flare up right now, right before my big races. So I'm
Right.
going through and doing all my exercises now. So, but that's
Okay.
just
Yeah.
something that's kind of cyclical over the years.
I remember when I was at the gym, when I worked at the gyms, I remember I had a pain again right here, and it was like prominent when I would grab the plates to put it on a barbell. Is that what you have?
Yeah, but mine's
Very
on the
similar.
inside, but yeah, very similar.
Very similar. Vamshi, you had something like that too, right?
Yes, I used to have that one, and it's gone
Yeah.
now. Yes.
Yeah. So one of the reasons I'm bringing it to light is because often you'll hear Ben talk about how like we're not alone in our struggles. We're alone definitely in our strengths, but not our struggles. And it's a very, very important thing to realize, because this exists everywhere. Like, and if we can kind of just like externalize anything that we're dealing with and be like, this is just it. What's the answer here? We have a community here. We have the Telegram chat. If you guys, by the way, are not in the Telegram chat, please message your coach right after this call and be like, I want in there. Because that's the whole point of it, is being able to actually reach out just like that. Because like right there, Al, you just had like this opening or kind of this segue to more information about like what we can do to conquer this, right? And it can be like exploration of different postures or different stuff, different approaches rather, that you can even just go through with your coach just to make sure that this is something you can look after. Because that kind of pain, it's I'm not gonna lie, man, like you're gonna get stuff like that. If it's on this, then it's here. If it's on here, it's like my wife gets migraines. Because she lifts, and that's just what happens. When she starts lifting heavy, she starts getting migraines. And it's like, okay, it's probably something to do with spinal alignment, because it usually is something to do with her head. But anyways, like that's the whole point. So again, same thing as I was telling Des, just hold on to that because we're gonna get into stuff like that too. So if you guys again you have an answer, that's fine. Just think about it, and then as I'm kind of talking, I want to go through this with you, okay? So what I want you to think is that what we're trying to do is we're trying to think of training. As again, this is a massive conversation, so we're boiling down to some fine points. But I want you to think of training as like two parts, okay? In and out of the gym, okay? It's not just one side. I play guitar. I'm sure you guys do some things that are extracurricular. Des, you play golf. Guys, I know that you have different hobbies. Sometimes you have a hobby that's practice driven, right? Like guitar, for example. It's just practice. I can get better in my playing of guitar in an hour. I can do that. I'm sure that if you were to practice a card trick, you could do that as well, right? You could get better. Can't do that in the gym. It's not how it works. The gym, we go in there to create a stimulus, okay? That stimulus then is solved for in the next time, in the time outside of the gym, okay? And the reason why is because of certain things that get in the way of muscular development that we're going to talk about later. But that's what I want you guys to think about right now, okay? Gym is for stimulus, outside of the gym is for recovery. Recovery, a lot of people think that recovery means something that it doesn't. And there's definitely elements of recovery that are going to, go along with what their narrative or what thought of recovery is in terms of just relaxation and stuff. But for right now, I want you to think about optimization of growing tissue. That's what I want you to think. How can I optimize growing tissue? Or how can I optimize my efficacy in the next session? That's recovery. Okay. Have you guys thought of training like that so far? Or is this like a new thought for you? David, I'm gonna pick on you because it just popped in.
That doesn't sound like something I've consciously thought before, so you got me.
So what has it been for you? Like what has training normally been?
I mean, I'm just really focused on the stimulus while I'm there, following the map that I got, and when I'm outside of the gym, it's kind of like I'm just looking at what's right in front of me. I'm not looking too far
Stuff like
down the
that.
road.
And that's okay. Nothing's wrong with that, right? Like the thing I often get from people, and Mike, I saw you on mute, so I'll have to ask your opinion on what you're going to say next. But like one of the things I find from people often is that they look at the gym as just trying to do work. Like they're trying to burn calories, they're trying to do work, they're trying to get things done and work hard. Which is why sometimes when you introduce these new concepts to them, it's not that they're wrong, it's just that they're completely just not looking at it like that. So then we have to kind of change expectations or change the understanding. So it's like again, gym, if we're in the gym to train with weights. Presumably, we're doing it for resistance training, presumably for muscle growth, right? So then we're not doing that so that we're preparing to run a marathon. Because if you're trying to run a marathon, you'd be training for a marathon with running, right? Like it sounds simple, but sometimes people they get those things crossed. So, Mike, what were you gonna say, buddy?
Pretty close to what you just said. I'm focused right there. What's going on with the task at hand? First thing that came to my head, though, was you said optimization for growing tissue or efficacy in the next session. Can you blend both of them?
Like, I mean, like, can you do both at the same time?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's certain things that you can't control, which I want to get into again in a little bit. Certain things you absolutely can control. Like, and that's kind of the whole point. And I want you guys to look at that. So, that's a good segue, man. So one of the things, or sorry, we'll go on the side of in the gym right now. So as far as I'm concerned in the gym, you have three responsibilities. You need to optimize for the rep. And again, this is all assuming that your program has been written, your coach has your side, you're just kind of walking in and doing what you're told, okay? So if that's the case, even if you wrote your own program, you're still doing what you're told, which is you have to optimize for the best rep, you got to optimize for the best set, then you got to optimize for the best workout. And those might all sound like the same thing. So it's like, well, are they? It's like, well, maybe not, right? Because if you look at a lot of people, and this stuff for the people who've been here for more calls might be regurgitative or you might have heard it before, but we want every rep to be the same, right? In terms of its execution, not necessarily in terms of the qualities that the rep starts representing. But what we want is we want to be able to set up the rep to have the best, how do I phrase it? We want the exercise to elicit the best response based on what we're trying to get the thing to do. So meaning like if you're doing a bicep curl, you want your bicep to work. Now, again, that sounds pretty simple, right? But it's not because a lot of people, as a simple example, I'm not sure if you really see it, but they'll hold their arm in a bicep curl vertical, and then their arm is not holding any weight. There's no weight in the bicep right now. So if you just move your arm slightly forward, now the bicep actually has tension. That little tiny little technique change then changes the tension in the bicep. Now that's intentionality. That's also setting up to a concept I wanted to kind of bring into you guys. That again, same thing. I'm gonna repeat myself a lot. But something that can help you set up exercises so that you can get the better response without having to go through so much nuance internally about squeezing muscles, which a lot of people can get obsessed with. The squeezing is for a different reason that we'll get into. But what I want to talk about is like moment arms and understanding how to position your muscles to be leveraged to move the weight. Okay. And this can get really fun and really interesting. Sorry, interesting. So if you guys want to message me later, and I can kind of throw you down a rabbit hole. But as an example, do you guys have anything slightly heavy around you? It's a stupid exercise. You're gonna laugh in 2 seconds. I'm gonna show you. Okay, anything just slightly heavy, nothing too heavy, less than 5 pounds. You got anything around you? Got it? Quickly. You got it. Perfect. Awesome. I'm gonna have my water bottle. Grab your thing. Hold your arm out to the side. Okay, what muscle's working? Right? Did anybody have to cue their delt to work? No. No one, right? So right now my pec isn't working, my quad isn't working. No matter how much I try, my calf isn't going to lift this weight. It's going to be my delt, right? We know that. Now, if we go like this, we turn it around like this to point the bicep to the sky. What muscle just turned on? The bicep. See what I'm saying? You guys feel that? Okay, I should be getting a lot of nods. Okay, so that's just a thought experiment I want you guys to think about based on positioning. So what muscles do is they move bones. This is all physics. It's all it is, and you can dive into this as much as you guys want. But physics just viewed through like gravity and free weights, and all we just did there with literally zero cueing. I didn't give you any cueing on how to squeeze the muscle. You didn't think about squeezing, nothing happened. I just said, hey, this muscle is best leveraged to move this weight if I just do this. Oh, and then by changing that, I just put the bicep up, and it's like now the bicep's working. Okay. Now, are those optimal? I'm not talking about optimal right now. I'm talking about muscles working, right? So the point of the exercise is to realize that sometimes cueing can be misunderstood. And I want you guys to think about cueing as the better way to continue the set rather than the rep. The rep needs to be set up. The cueing needs to make sure that you can continue to do that. So as an example, if we take that again, you guys can follow me if you want, you don't have to, but if you have this down to your side, the cueing is there to be like, hey, am I still in it? And you're thinking, do you get back into that position with that delt, right? Because some people go, ugh! I'm sure you've seen it, or they turn it into like, the dance club, you've seen that? Where everybody's hipping and hopping. Like, but we want to think cueing, get the delt to work, raise it up with the arm. So that's why we cue, but it's not cueing first. We want to look at it as a way to execute reps efficiently and effectively and consistently, right? So you're saying the cueing is going to establish that motor pattern in your brain. So you actually can have like a brain down response. Does that make sense? And a lot of people think it's the opposite, think it's muscle to brain. It's absolutely not. Like, you can't just like say, hey, this is gonna work this. Because if it was, then moment arms wouldn't exist. So I'm gonna stop there. Do you guys understand that so far? Are you with me? Okay. So then where we can get into this, I'm gonna see if I can share my screen. I want to show you something. Can you guys see my screen? Yeah. Some nods, yeah.
Got
Okay,
it.
so we got a moment arm here. You guys see that picture? So this moment arm would describe, based on the position of the weight, again, it's free weight, so it's vertical, what muscles are going to be working. So we have the moment arm right here in the deadlift, the yellow to the glute, and then the other one to the lower back. We got two other ones in the squat, one going to the knee, one going to the glute, one going to the lower back. You can kind of see that. So why moment arms work, and this is a really simple one. They can get kind of hairy to look at when they get complicated. But for you guys, the reason why this matters is because what's the first thing I said in terms of optimizing a rep? Setup, right? Setup, that's the word. You're optimizing a rep based on setup. It has nothing to do right now with squeezing. Squeezing comes later, right? Because no matter what you do, if you set it up wrong, if this guy doing the deadlift, if his knee is forward, let's just imagine this guy right here, instead of the moment arm being particularly to the hip, he pushes his knees forward and he rounds his back, right? No matter how much this man is squeezing his glutes, he's disadvantaged them. You see that? Right? Give me a lot of nodding if you're not going to pop open your headsets or your mics there, guys, just so I can make sure that you're with me, okay? Because I can't really see it too much with the share screen. So, in the same thing with the squat, we have a guy, like let's just say we have two different guys. One guy has a long femur, one guy has a short femur. This guy right here seems like he's pretty average, but he's blessed. But a lot of people don't have the opportunity to even get their knee past the moment arm in the barbell squat. They just don't. They're not going to happen. Like David, we've been talking a lot, or we talked a lot before about like goblet squats and why they're effective, because that's actually going to help you have a positional, like, or sorry, a vertical position. The vertical position is going to help you push your knees forward. So if you think about that mentally, you have a bar or a goblet dumbbell in your hand, you're squatting vertically, pushing the knees forward, then what are we doing with the moment arm there to elicit a response in the quads? Right? The vertical path, knees go forward. We're making a quad dominant motion, because if you start hinging and pushing the butt back, then what's happening is you're turning into the lower back hip. You see the difference, guys? Okay. So again, the reason why this matters is this is optimal setup, right? Setup comes first. And then what happens is when you're in the setup, anybody who's gone to a camp, I'm not sure if you guys have, but if you get a chance, oh no, Vamps, you have. Ben will do the famous 1-inch squat with you, right? And that's, if you haven't seen it, do it online. You should probably just go type in Ben Pekulski 1-inch squat. It's always fun to watch people squirm. And that's exactly what he does. It makes them get into a squat and just hold the position, then squeeze the muscles and then hold the position. And it's great. But what you'll see is some people can't get in position, right? Some people cannot get their hips down low enough to make it actually a quad dominant squat. So what they're probably going to feel in the top of the time that they're doing that is their lower back, right? Like Des, you were talking in the beginning of this of the meeting about how like you feel like you lack the hip mobility to get into positions, right? So for you
Yeah, I've
may
got
notice that like you might get knee pain, or you might just feel it very hippy, your lower back, like you get light lower back pumps when you do a lot of squats.
long femurs, so they hit the joint pretty quick.
So let's just explore that, right? So that imagine this is you. I would probably bet that this knee is like almost all, like exactly in line with this, and then your hips are way back. So at the moment, I'm going to hips and lower back almost exclusively for you because of the long femurs.
Yeah.
So what's the answer? You stand on some plates, you get some lifters to make sure that you have a more vertical position and drive those knees forward. And then what happens is your squat gets weak, right? Because you feel like you can't do it because you're vertical and it's purely quad motion. So now we've taken tension away. So this is why we start leaning on externally stabilized positions like hack squats or leg presses. So then you can actually do that, but in a stable position, so you can drive more tension to the quads. Okay, so this is kind of a cool conversation I didn't expect to get into, but like I'm sure people have broached the topic before to you about like squats being the best leg builder. This is why maybe not, right? This is why maybe yes, it depends on the person. But the maybe is dependent on literally physiology, right? And your ability to command mobility, so stability, right? Can you get in the position necessary in terms of the moment arm to actually elicit tension in the right muscles you're trying to do? Because no matter what you do, if your femurs are not traveling forward and you don't have that moment arm on your side, your quads will not develop like they should, or like they could rather, in a back squat as they would in a hack squat. Does that make sense? So in a hack squat, what happens? Vertical torso, knees go forward. That's it. Doesn't matter long femur, short femur, they're going forward, right? So whose quads are working? Anybody's. That's why they're there, right? But what happens with a lot of people in hack squats? They might lack the depth, or they might sit that their knees hurt, right? Because it's all tension there. So we take away that crux, and or so rather add one, and we need to fix that. So anyways, that's a different conversation we'll get into later. So that's the best like way to optimize for a rep. Now the best set is trying to get stimulating reps. So stimulating reps. Actually, before I get into this, do you have any questions about setup? Because I think that's actually kind of more complicated than maybe I'm making it seem. I want to make sure that's something that you guys understand. You guys have questions, please just blurt them out. Guys feel pretty confident in your setup? Yeah? Okay. So if we're looking at optimizing for a set, I want you guys to think about something called an getting stimulating reps. What stimulating reps are is when you're actually getting a contraction that slows down, okay? When you have a muscle fiber, the contraction speed and that slow down is what we're actually looking for as a key indicator for muscular development, or at least the stimulus for it, okay? The slowdown of the contraction. Now we have to do a couple little sermons first. The slowdown of contraction does not mean I'm getting tired here and I'm giving it less effort. Do you see the difference? Okay, I want you to think like this. Everybody's been in a hack squat or a leg press, right? Yeah. Okay, so you ever driven it to failure? How fast was your last rep versus the first rep? No, not at all,
Very
right?
slow.
Very slow. And that's good because that rep right there was stimulating. Okay, what I want you guys, this is your first thing. Well, actually, second to best based on the setup, but you guys are seeming pretty confident with setup. First thing you can take into your workouts, I want you to start counting your stimulating reps. Okay? Literally count them. How are you going to count them? You're going to have to film your set. Okay? Because when you film your set, you're going to have to watch it back and actually watch based on your first rep. You'll see that first rep speed. That first rep, no matter what you do, unless you're lifting like very extremely efficiently and probably in the category of like 4 to 6 reps, the first rep is probably not going to be stimulating. It's just too fast. Okay? But look at it anyways to establish like a base rate of how fast you can move. And then watch the rest of the reps in the set and start paying attention to whether or not you slow down. Okay. When you start seeing it slow down, even by a bit, count it. Be like, okay, there's my first rep. Because this can be very eye-opening to people as to why they're not getting results in the gym. I've had some people who are incredibly strong and they come at me and they're like, I don't know why my quads aren't growing. And then I film their set. I'm like, show me one rep. And then they didn't slow down. They're like, but it was heavy. I'm like, I know. I'm sorry you're strong. That just sucks. Like, it's the case, but it's like, that's just the burden of being strong, right? I have one girl that I train and she can squat 300 and she'll come over and she'll do reps and she'll do like a 5x5 with near 300 pounds. And she'll be like, they feel like crap, and I'm having a hard time with them. And I'm like, show me one rep that slows down, and they don't slow down. But in here, they're hard, right? So then what's the answer? Like, we have to still practice that motion as a skill. But for her to get stimulating reps, she probably just needs to get into a hack squat or a leg press or a leg extension. Because then she can actually grind out those reps without the fear of the bar crushing her, right? You guys with me so far? Okay, so that's your first task. So I want you to film your sets in the gym. I want you to actually count your stimulating reps. And I want you to report back to me or report to your coach and just say something about how, like, wow, I either am working harder than I thought, which is important because this is going to go into the second part of the conversation, which is about fatigue and recovery, right? Because if you're working really, really hard, what do you think's happening there, right? You probably need to recover better, right? And then maybe you're not working hard at all. And that doesn't mean that you can't. This means maybe you thought you were. And that's actually kind of a cool conversation to just to kind of dive into and discover. Because a lot of people, I believe most people are working hard enough. I think they may just not understand what that means. Or they need to understand what they're working for. Like, a lot of people work hard to sweat and to pant and to like just get this like idea of solid workout feeling, but they don't necessarily try to make the muscle do its job to its maximum extent. So if we change that from I don't care if I'm sweating, I'm actually looking more to see if I can tax this muscle and make it get as many stimulating reps as possible, then the set might change a lot for you. And what I found personally in my own training, I start looking forward to it. I'm actually like, okay, now the set has started. And I almost get this like internal grin where like I'm in the stimulating rep category, get going, because now it matters, because you can feel it. You can actually feel when they slow down, right? And it's like, okay, now it's go time. And it's like, yeah, it changes. So that's the second thing. Third thing would be causing, optimizing for the best workout, right? So again, set up for the best rep, making sure you're getting stimulating reps so for the best set, and then optimizing for the best workout. What do you think this means? Essentially, to me, it's not causing excess fatigue or muscular damage. Okay. So there was a lot of, and again, if you guys didn't know this or if this is new information to you, always open for conversation. I don't want to make anybody feel stupid or anything like that for not knowing this or for feeling opposite, because it's not necessarily new information, but it's new information to to general population that like muscles aren't broken down and built back up. That's not how it works. It's a different thing. So myofibrillar protein synthesis, something called MyOS. This is a process that is allocated towards repairing muscular damage and muscular growth, hypertrophy. Okay. That's two things though. That's not the same thing. So meaning like when they've done tests in the past, this is why it was a little hairy. People got confused with this because they'd see MyOps elevated, right? And they'd see MyOps, again, myofibrillary protein synthesis, they'd see it elevated after things like marathon runs, or they'd see it elevated after high rep training, right? And they'd be like, there you go, it's causing hypertrophy. But then like that's not showing what you think it's showing. It's just showing that MyOps was triggered. Doesn't mean it was going towards growth. It means it was going towards damage repair. But the way I want you guys to think about damage from now on, metaphor in my brain, is like you guys have a fancy car, okay? So you guys have you're all 16 again, and you have a bunch of Honda Civics, okay? And you have an appointment to get flame decals on it tomorrow, and you're super excited. But on the way to getting your flame decals, you get in an accident, okay? There's damage. So now you have to get it repaired. When it gets repaired, when it gets given back to you, it doesn't come with the flame decals. It's just the same car. Okay? Then you still have to take it back there. And a lot of people will get in another accident. And then they're wondering why they're not having growth, right? Because they'll keep on doing this process over and over again. And our job is to try to come out of every single session or every single week with a net positive in terms of I haven't done too much damage that's actually not beneficial. Certain things like excess inflammation, swelling, edema, definitely losing strength. Like if you guys are noticing a detraining effect, that you're actually getting weaker and you can't contend with yourself, usually that's seen in like the lower end of 8 reps and lower, not necessarily in endurance training because cardio fatigue is a different topic, but like in strength training, anything lower than 8 reps, if you're noticing you can't keep up with yourself, you're getting weaker, you're noticing your muscles are shrinking in size, you probably are either in the fatigued position or you're causing too much damage. Okay. So I'm going to pause there for 1 second because this is kind of not only an interesting conversation, but it might have had some stuff in there you guys haven't heard before. So if you want to talk about it.
Yeah, Steve, I think speaking from personal experiences, there's been several occasions where I've overdone it, not proper form, where I come out of the gym feeling worse than, when I entered the gym. I think another big component too, though, is what happens outside of the gym, right? The post recovery, nutrition, and then just lifestyle components too. I've noticed for me personally, there's big impacts on how my body feels immediately after the workout, but then also for the rest of the day, and then how I set up that evening, and then getting ready for it's cyclical, getting ready for the following workout the next morning as well. So there's just a, and I know that's a whole probably different topic, master class on, I guess just post-workout nutrition, and then
Yeah.
all the other components that come after that.
Well, you can already see, like, even just with these three things that, like, I'm like, I don't want to run on a tangent because I will, because this stuff to me is not only fun, but it's also really super interesting to talk about because as you talk about it, it's the natural product of the information that you can be like, oh, but this means this, so let's go with that. What happens here? And then you start kind of getting into this whole spitball. Right. So it can be a really big thing. But like, dude, you started this whole the meeting today telling me like doing trail running. So automatically I know that you're the guy who's gonna go and try to make himself sweat and die. Like that's just how your brain's gonna work. I'm like, yeah, right? What so the most humbling thing for guys like you, Al, and just so you know, I'm right there with you. Like I used to be at least because I used to do a lot of mountain biking and I'd love cross country. It wasn't downhill, you do like up and down. So it was a lot of endurance riding. And I had to really get that out of my head. I'm not saying working hard isn't a good thing. I'm saying it's not necessarily where you want to lean into in terms of muscular growth, right? Because there can be like this, it's almost like we want to approach this training with like an equation we're trying to solve for, and that's what I want you to think. But you start getting into weight training and you see these big meatheads and they do a couple reps and they put it down. And then you're like, how are you bigger than me? And they're not even, they're presumably not trying, and they're busting your ass. And it gets confusing, right? Because effort in a lot of people's brains is what they can control. So I'm gonna do it. And it's the hardest worker in the room philosophy that like we can apply it, but let's try to think about applying it to a different way, right? So it can be yeah, like if we talk about that equation actually before we kind of go into the outside of the like outside of the gym's part of this conversation, the equation that I want you guys to think about that maybe you can take as the next thing, like the first thing being counting your stimulating reps. The next thing is trying to solve this equation is how many reps can you get in a set without causing damage or fatigue? And that's the next thought, right? Because a lot of people, just 1 second there, Andrew, a lot of people will try their hardest to like just go crazy, thinking that that's going to be the thing. But we know now that fatigue, like, so, and again, we're getting into that. It's actually an adherent, sorry, it's interference effect to growth. It actually delays growth. Okay. So what we know causes fatigue is excess reps, like anything more than like, in some cases, 8 to 12, 15, going higher than that. And anything that I actually want you guys to think is just generally harder. Like you guys know, right? If you guys do, you guys have ever done like incline bicep curls versus just like a dumbbell curl? What's harder? The incline dumbbell curl, right? Same kind of thing as like if you guys do, what would be it? Like a leg extension or lunges? What's harder? Lunges. Like we know these answers, right? And so anything that you can feel intrinsically that is harder than something else is probably going to cause some more fatigue. What were you going to say there, my friend Andrew?
It might be tied to what you're getting into. Question kind of going back to the stimulating reps. So I mean that concept makes sense about focusing on those reps where you're starting to struggle a little bit, slowing down. How do you think about that though in terms of like I know with Coach Chris we do lots of slow negatives and pauses, slow eccentric, and it's a, like how do you wrap all that together?
So it's a different goal, and that's what you have to really understand when you're going to different training, because this none of the things I'm going to say right now make any other training less valid. It's just it changes expectations. And that's a massive thing that I think any athlete needs to understand, right? So, as an example, in the session, if you did deadlifts and then rows, what's going to happen to your rows? You're going to be weaker, right? Okay, now if you did rows and deadlifts, what's going to happen to your rows? You're going to be stronger, right? But now your deadlifts are weaker. Okay, now you know that. But imagine if you didn't know that and you walked into your deadlifts and you're like, why am I weaker? Then you'd be pissed off and you'd be wondering why you're not getting results, right? So, same kind of thing happens when people don't know this information. That's why I want to give it to you. So, when you walk into a session that's more tempo based, you're like, okay, my coach wants me to learn how to control every inch of this rep. He wants me to be able to pause so I have complete mobility. He wants me to do this for this reason. Then you're understanding the reasons. So now we're lowering the expectation of pure hypertrophy because you're trying to get hypertrophy as a benefit. It's still going to be there. The strength of the signal isn't quite as high because these other things are priority. Okay. It's very similar to like mobility. I'll have some people. Do like, well, actually not some people, everybody goes through like a some semblance of a foundational phase with me. And if when I say foundations, I don't like that word. I wish that there was another word because foundations, it kind of insinuates like, I don't know, adolescence or like somebody is just extremely novice. And that's not the case. Like, 'cause I put myself through it all the time. Like we should consistently reassess, right? And that's really what it is. It's like assess and try to figure out where these low-hanging fruit are, what the areas of opportunity for muscular development and advancement are. And usually it's in certain mobility, like Des was saying in the beginning of the call, that can inhibit you from accessing ranges because those ranges are crucial towards muscular development. And you guys can all prove it as a, you guys can use yourself as case studies. I promise you 100% any muscle that you have developed on your body that better than anything else is probably the most mobile. It's just, it's always the way it is. You look at somebody who has small quads and they can't move their knee or they can't move their hip. Right? And it's just the way it is. You look at somebody who has like a small chest and their back, their posture sucks, and their shoulders round forward and they can't raise their arms. That these things are just consistent. Like these are just byproducts, right? It's like taking a car into a shop and seeing like rub marks and your alignments off on the tires. And then you're like, okay, so I know these problems. And then the mechanic goes to like, oh, I'm gonna check the ball joints and the control arm. I'm just gonna go there because I know that's with this. Okay. So to answer your question, to kind of bring it back full circle, it's like that's the reason why is because I want to give you this information to have expectations, or at least you can understand expectations, and then you can be like, okay, now I'm doing this for this. And this also might help you with just a little bit of mental buy-in, and so that you can get actually excited about the why, because then it can be like, I'm doing this so that I can be here in a month. I need to be there. Right? Like sometimes people like you look at abs, there's everybody has exercises, right? But if you tell somebody about abs and trying to get your abs to be, I don't know, stronger, breath work or something like breath work is like trying to drag a dead horse through mud sometimes with people. But like breath work is absolutely crucial because it's going to teach you how your diaphragm works so that you can protect your lower back. And I've been there as well. And these concepts are much more appreciated and therefore they'll actually be expressed and you'll chase them better if you understand the why later in training. Okay. So, but the stimulating reps thing, man, like it just so you know, this just again, guys, this isn't like an on or off thing. This doesn't mean you're not getting growth. It just means it's like, how do we optimize? Right? That's the goal. It's like, how do we optimize? So, to kind of recap on the in-session stuff, it's best rep, best set, best workout, right? So, your two goals from this is I want you guys to film your sets again, and I want you to count your stimulating reps. And the second thing would be I want you to try to manage the equation of how many stimulating reps can I get maximally without fatigue or without damage. You probably aren't going to be able to manage the fatigue thing too much unless you're rushing your breaks, but your coach will for you. Okay? That's our job. The damage you can do, because damage is often load. It's load management, because often in extremely stable and efficient exercises, it's you guys not picking your weights properly, and a lot of people will do too many reps, right? Or it's just going too fast and it's not being stable, this kind of stuff. And muscular damage also happens through things like excess movement into lengthened positions. Doesn't mean it's a bad thing, just means it's going to happen there. Okay. And also, if your coach, this is a big one that you guys can control as well. If your coach intentionally tells you to leave a rep off, do you guys have anything like that in your notes? Like David, right now, actually, Vamshi as well, you guys are both in like burn phases. But like if you were in we've talked before in deadlifts, like stay at a percent, hit this weight. I don't care if you can do seven, do five. Like we've done it before. Do you guys have that in your training where your coach actually says like 1 to 2 RIR? Follow it. There's a reason. Because the closer you get to failure, damage goes up. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. So the reason why this matters is because now we start getting into the outside of the workout stuff. So outside of the workout, we're trying to not exacerbate fatigue. Okay. Fatigue, two things. We have supraspinal fatigue. So basically anything from here up. Fatigue here, okay? Anything brain stuff, fatigue, that matters, okay? And there's other reasons we can't really get into because it will take us 10 hours. But fatigue in the brain, and then we have calcium ion related fatigue, okay? And that's more of a mechanical, biological process that happens, okay? This happens by training close to failure, and it happens by doing very, very complicated and stretch position exercises, okay? So those two things, again, you can kind of count on your coach to help you mitigate. It's gonna happen to some extent. You can adjust to it. Like if you haven't trained, let's just say I still have you in my window there. So Andrew, you're my guinea pig. But like if you had just started working out today, you've never lifted before in your life, you will have some room for adaptation within like your ability to get rid of calcium ions so that you can recover quicker. Okay. But calcium ions legitimately not only cause fatigue, but they actually cause damage to the muscle. The difference will be fatigue actually is maybe in a different muscle. Fatigue is usually global. Damage is on point. So meaning like if you have calcium ion related fatigue in your quads because you went and ham and your coach said that I only want you to do 8 leg extensions with 5 RIR and you're like, I'm gonna prove coach wrong and do 15 to failure. Then I'm going to drop set these guys. And then I'm going to not even rest. I'm going to go lunge after. Right. And then I'm going to beat it with a hammer. Then you, okay. So you've just basically just only tried to get calcium ion related fatigue. That actually does cause myofibrillar muscle breakdown. Okay. So it will 100%. Now, the interesting thing about it is that they've proven, and this is weird, that fatigue will affect other muscles. So meaning you do that to your quads. Tomorrow, your bench press is going to suck. And you'll see it. Go train heavy legs today. Like, kill yourself and then try to bench press tomorrow. You will be upset with how badly you perform. It's just what happens. Okay? So, does that make sense to you guys? Like, there's those fatigue mechanisms that I want you to think. Because a lot of people just throw the word fatigue. And what's the first thing people probably think of when they think fatigue? Oh, I didn't sleep. Tired. It's like, I didn't even talk about that. Often, I'm sure you guys would actually say, probably observationally, how many times you've been tired and gone and had a great session? Right? I remember breaking my first deadlift record. The first time I pulled over 500, I hadn't slept. My son was just born. It was the first session back to the gym, and I hadn't slept. And I went and pulled 520, and I was like, what? And I was blown away. I was like, well, how can I do this? I haven't slept. I'm fatigued. It's like, that's not what matters. Tiredness is just gonna, it's gonna be another percent to your efficacy, but it's not going to be mitigation for fatigue. Now, I'm not also saying though don't sleep. That's not what I'm saying. So just if you heard that, but yeah, does that make sense, guys? So again, fatigue management of anything supraspinal, so anything here that can be obviously just from too much complicated stuff, and that can be as an example. Actually, Andrew, you're still there, so I'm going to bring you. As you mentioned Chris doing that. Chris is a power lifter and Chris likes a lot of compound motions, so do I. But if you do a lot of them, you ever notice that like if you had a day of back squats, Romanian deadlifts, lunges, a lot of motions that require coordination, the next day you're just sapped. You ever notice that?
Yeah, definitely been some times.
Whereas if you went in and did isolated bicep curls, delt raises, chest flies, you'd be like, I'm good to go. Right? There's a different feeling to it. And so those motions were like shortened range motions, externally stabilized versus highly complicated, requiring a lot of coordination, very stretch based. Right? And so those things cause that fatigue. Okay. So does that make sense to you guys? Got any questions on that? Because that can be a little bit, it can be a little bit yeah, hairy for some people to kind of digest.
Definitely, I wouldn't have guessed that getting that like local fatigue, like say you're doing a ton of leg extensions and that could affect your bench the next day. Like I never would have thought that.
It's wild. Yeah, it's absolutely wild, man. If you guys are on Instagram, follow a guy named Chris Beardsley. He goes into this stuff like crazy. Again, Chris Beardsley. And this is his whole account, just it's about as dry as a Triscuit. So good luck. But you'll get the information. It's awesome information. You'll love it. It's very good for applying to your workouts. But fatigue is just super fascinating, man, because when you understand it, then you can actually use this information to take your own training further, and you will 100% see the effects. I made it my goal to design my own program around fatigue management, and within 4 weeks, I brought my deadlift up from 485 for eight to like 525 for five. And I was able to like do these things for reps. I was able to bring my squat competitively up as well. I was able to close grip bench press 315 for five or six reps. Like there's a lot of things that like was just jumped up, and I didn't even do any volume. And that's almost the frustrating part about managing fatigue, is because what happens is that in the byproducts of managing your fatigue, you also have to let go of the hardest worker in the room mentality, because you can't be trying to bust your ass anymore. You have to be going there and being efficient and not trying to die. So do you see how those competing ideologies, like they just go like this, right? Now, is there a time to do things like cardiovascular training? 100%, but that's when we do it, right? And the complication is when people try to marry them, right?
I've been learning this the hard way. I started swimming like a month ago, and the kind of working hard thing, I was supposed to do like 30 minutes to 45 minutes, and I went for the full 45, and I've never felt fatigue like it. Like the next again day in the gym, like I just could hardly lift anything.
Yeah.
And that's kind of something that's kind of just that I've just became aware of, which is pretty interesting. But then it
Okay.
was weird because like the next again workout session. So I swam on the Tuesday, Wednesday I could hardly lift anything, but the Friday it was almost like an adaptation happened. And then I managed to lift probably like some of my PBs and some of the
Good for
exercises,
you.
which was kind of strange.
And that's what happens often too, right?
Yeah.
Is that people take time off, and then what happens? They come back stronger, right? So what actually happens previously, I'm not sure if you guys follow this or not, but previously in the literature, people thought this was called supercompensation. Supercompensation basically being you take time off, and then what happens? Your brain supercompensates and your muscles grow back faster and they get strong. It's not actually what happens. Like the sad thing is people need to realize is that you are always there. You always actually were capable. And then what happens is fatigue brings you here. And then when you have time off, guess what happens? Fatigue just goes away. And that's what's frustrating. And so one of the biggest keys towards growth, especially for people who are aspiring to be like natural, is that you need to manage fatigue, because otherwise you're never going to be able to do the work needed to stimulate the muscle growth to the next level, because what's happening is you're always in a fatigue position. So which means that if your muscles need X amount of tension to take to the next level, they're not getting it. You're just not able to push it, right?
How much impact does like brain fatigue have on that? For example, if you've got like a mentally draining job or something like that, how does
Huge,
that?
huge. There was a study done where they had two different groups do a workout, and one group just did the work, the other group did a math test. That's it, a math test. It was like a 5-minute math test, and it wasn't crazy. It was like obviously a general population math test, and it was something like 30 to 40% reduction in efficiency in the group that did the math test. Yeah, it's insane. I remember working at Good Life, and I had a long day, and I didn't do anything. I just walked around talking to people and doing sales. And I went and tried to train legs after, and I couldn't compete within 50 pounds on my front squat. I had to take 50 pounds off the bar. I was like, oh my God, I'm dead. And the irony is that this is sometimes switched. Like today I had a deadlift session and I was dead because I didn't sleep last night. My kid was putting his foot up my butt all night and I couldn't sleep at all. And I went in there, I was like, I'm gonna have to deadlift anyways. And I still pulled the weight off and I still pulled the reps off I needed to hit, but they were heavy and I felt dead. But I still did the job, which is weird, right? And that's what we wouldn't expect, because I'm actually tired, but my body was like, I don't care, you're good. And that's the difference between fatigue and I'm just tired, right? It's like, had I not been tired, that probably would have felt better, but the job still got done. And so this is why this fatigue thing is really interesting to dive in, so you guys can actually understand what's trying to go on there, or what you're trying to accomplish rather. Okay. So we got 5 minutes left, guys. I want to make sure I can kind of go through this, but I don't want to drive it through it, because I don't want you guys to be confused. The last two things, then this one's more specialty. So this might be just hitting home for guys who tend to have a background in dieting. If you guys, again, I believe everybody starts fitness from one or two places. Either you're running from pain or you're running towards pleasure, right? You either have pictures of Ronnie Coleman and Arnold on your wall, and you're like, I want to look like that guy. Or we had some weight, and we're like, I want to get that off. Like, I was the first. I was trying to get the weight off, right? And then now I've changed that mindset towards I'm running towards pleasure. I love the workout. Now that's why I work out, right? But ultimately, this might change your decisions you make. And one of the problems I see with people who have that first mentality of running from pain is that they have the mentality that's always lingering to cut calories. And calories are a powerful motivator because what is a calorie? What is a calorie? Like, literally, it's a unit of energy, right? And if we actually look at that, then what are we talking about? We're talking about recovery. What are we trying to do in recovery? Get our energy back. So this is a pretty simple no-brainer, right? But we don't listen to ourselves because what happens is, like, we may do things subconsciously that are in alignment with the habits of somebody trying to lose weight. And if you're trying to grow muscle, you need calories, and you could be just doing too much movement. You could just be not eating right after the workout because you want to make sure that you're staying thin. You could be doing these separate things. So what I would encourage you to do, if that sounds like you, is set goals and timelines and expectations based on what you're trying to do so you can mentally exist through it. So meaning, like, if you're in a bulking phase, put a date to it. That's okay. Nothing wrong with that. That way you know when you're supposed to be in here until when you're out, right? Same thing with the diet. Like, I'm in the diet for the next 6 weeks. So right now, yeah, I am cutting calories. So the goal, I might be tired. I might not perform as good as I can. That's okay, right? But if you have dates, then it changes expectations. That can be really powerful so that we're not doing the opposite thing in the opposite time, because then that's purgatory. You're wondering why you're not growing, but your modalities, you're actually, if you actually look at your calories, you're actually unintentionally putting yourself into a deficit because you're probably moving too much or you're not eating enough. Does that make sense? Okay, so that's another thing outside the gym I want you guys to think to, but just observe it. It's more of a personal observation. As an example, when I finished my cut this past couple months, I noticed I kept walking a lot because I like it. It makes me feel good. And I was like, okay, I'm walking still like 15,000 steps a day. This is probably taking 400 calories from me. So whereas when I was in a deficit, I didn't eat the calories back because I was trying to create a deficit. But now being in a surplus, I want to walk because it helps my hips. It helps me feel good. So what do I do now? I make sure I increase my caloric intake by 400 calories. Okay? So this is really, really important just to understand how to make sure you're balancing and managing for fatigue. Okay? And the last thing, which is probably the most simple for you guys, and you guys can definitely jump in on, will be leveraging high-impact items that actually help you subjectively feel better. And steering away from things that subjectively make you feel worse. Okay. Just use common sense, pay attention. And also, these aren't the same for every single person. Everybody's different, right? Me and Dave, we've talked about this a bunch of times, but like, if this makes you feel good, maybe it's the right answer today, right? Like, if you're out there and you're having ice cream with your kids and that's a great time, do not say no. Like, say no if you're in a deficit or find a way to make it work, like in terms of your calories. But if it makes you happy, that's recovery, and that is true. Okay, and you can see this stuff. I had a client before that would always test on his Whoop band as recovery, and whenever he went out with his kids on this Sunday, the next day was always substantially higher. And he'd go out for ice cream, movies, popcorn, and he still did an amazing transformation, lost like 40, 50 pounds. And he would do that kind of stuff, and we just made it work, right? So we provided him with calorie exchange the next couple of days throughout the week to make sure he's optimizing for that, but he still did it. Because it helped him. And then the next day was better because he was doing those things. So my suggestions would be like, if you want to lean on some things, obviously lean on sleep, like getting your 6 to 8 hours, hopefully eight. And if you're in a deficit, maybe even getting up to 10 if you have the opportunity. A lot of people don't. I get it. Leveraging food quality, okay? But maybe also looking at food from the opposite end in terms of trying to eat things that don't cause inflammation, don't cause gastric distress, don't cause any problems, even not necessarily distress, but like some food might be fine for you, but you just know they make you feel crap. It's like trying to eat like a full lasagna and then going and squatting. Probably not the best idea. You're probably gonna hate yourself, right? And then other things like just making sure you're not having anything like alcohol or, having like your cell phone in front of your face before you go to bed because it's gonna screw up your sleep. But we know these things, okay? What I would suggest you guys take from that is actually make a list of the things that you know that you're probably doing right now, having heard that you know that you haven't fixed yet. Make a list, start hacking at it. Okay? So I can tell you right now, this thing's the death of me, and that's the first thing I gotta hack at. So what's yours? I'd like to hear something from everybody. What's something you're gonna start hacking at, Meg?
Me?
Yeah.
I just did it. Turned the lights down at 7 o'clock, so it just switched over.
Awesome. Love it. What about you, Dave?
Yeah, I need to hack a new sleep routine. I had it down for, probably the first year you and I worked together, and then I now have a new living situation with my girlfriend, and so we're up a little later, and I'm not getting up as early in the morning as I used to, so I haven't quite figured it out yet.
Okay, awesome. Let me know how I can help, okay? Andrew.
Probably sleep for me. Just I have a very hard time unwinding at night. Makes me want to have a drink to help unwind, even though I know that's awful for sleep. But it's like I can't ever shut my mind off. So it's like, yeah, stress management and sleep.
Have you brought this up to your coach?
Yeah.
Okay. Hack at it, man. It really will help. It really transforms things. The problem is it's not going to happen right away.
Yeah.
It's going to take time. And not only taking time to feel it, but it's going to take time to start getting like a hold of it. But bear with it. It'll happen. Chaz, I know you just went through a little late, but
Yeah,
what's something
just
you need to start
avoiding
with?
the cell phone. Cell
Yeah, you and me both, buddy. So stop texting.
phone.
I'm joking. Don't do that. No, but you're doing good, buddy. It's something we can all do, right? The blue light also just screws up your eyes, and I've definitely seen that. Babshi, what about you? You're muted, buddy.
Okay. Yeah. So for me, like enjoying things with my kids outside more, I usually tend to skip those things with the fear that I would be like, precise to the dots and dashes. But as you said, that example, right? That helps me whenever I go out with the kids. I feel so good. And mentally it changes, like, what you're going to do next day.
Does, man. That's awesome. Good to hear. I know it's time to go, guys, so I really appreciate you popping on the call. If you'd like, it would really help me just because this not only helps me with better doing this better and doing this in this style, because I feel that not only this is this information better absorbed as a conversation, but I do better delivering like that. Would you guys mind just staying for 2 more seconds, just letting me know something from this call that you personally took, or maybe something that like a light went off or something you're going to take into your own training? I'll go with you, Mike, again first.
Shoot, I actually took quite a bit from this call. everything you mentioned about how we work out in the gym and what the thought is we're the activity right in front of us. Like my thought is it's exactly what you just said. I'll come out of a workout and I'll feel like, man, I just got gassed. That was amazing. But then, potentially be sore, fatigued the next day, have the headache in the afternoon, that kind of stuff. And never did I realize that that was actually counterintuitive for truly building muscle, that you're only rehealing to what you were before.
Right.
Yeah. And then everything you said on recovery, I'm in the right path, I guess. That's what I focused on the most. And I'm here to truly learn how to build muscle the right way and maintain that muscle.
Awesome, man. Good to hear, man. David?
Yeah, sometimes when talking to you, it's a lot of information, so I'll take notes and have to look back at it later. So one of the things that you've said to me repeatedly is about the slowing down of that effective rep.
Yeah.
I've had in my mind sometimes going to failure, but I have not paid attention to the slowing down of those last few reps, and so I'm going to do a better job of filming it so that I can see that. That really was a good suggestion.
Awesome. And if I can actually add to that, just so you guys know, one thing that I was saying that's actually a thought exploration. It's like kind of like something you can take into the gym, is it doesn't necessarily mean you'll get there. That's the point of exploring it. Because you may not. Like if you were trying to get lunges to slow down, good luck. You're probably just gonna have a heart attack first. And that's the point. Because I want you to realize that though. I want you to get there to the point where you're trying, and you're like, I just can't because my heart's gonna blow up. Okay, cool. So then guess what we do is we put that exercise in a different category. And then you're saying now you know lunges are not gonna grow my quads effectively like a leg press, a hack squat, and everybody's gonna have a different answer, right? Does that make sense? Chaz, were you here for the full conversation to be able to tell me what you got from this call?
Most of it, yeah, most of it. The stimulating reps was great for me to get that. You relay that to me as my coach some. But I understand it better now, hearing you just talk about it.
Awesome. Great to know, man. Andrew?
Yeah, a few things. I mean, I think just globally thinking about, training on one side and recovery on the other. I think I like training, man. Like even a lot of the stuff that Chris had me doing that I hated at first, I like it. But I screw up stuff on the recovery side consistently, and I need to pay more attention to it. The stimulating reps is useful too, because I've always thought about going to failure, but this is like a window in between, right? Of like just challenging reps that are starting to kind of grind it out a little without.
Yeah, and for me too, for me, it makes me review the word failure. Why am I failing? Because you may now still fail, but you'll be like, but I never slowed down. That's okay. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It just means, again, just like I was saying before to David, it's like you're now exploring that thought. So am I failing because I'm losing coordination? Am I failing because I'm losing, again, my breath, right? And then when you start doing it, like when I looked at my squat, I'll be squatting the decent weight for me, and it's a 5x5 that's killing me, and every single rep is fast, but the last one, and the last one's only slow because I'm losing my ability to brace. So did I really even get a stimulating rep on my quads? Probably not. Like I did some work. Is it better than nothing? Yes. But can I do more work in like a pendulum squat or a hack squat? 100%. And that's what people need to take from this understanding. So that's awesome, man.
I really like thinking about fatigue as an equation too. I mean, that's a different way of
Yeah.
looking at it to me, is that I'm definitely guilty of, like, especially the days I feel good in the gym, like looking at, we got a, I'm in a phase right now with Chris, and a lot of that is like, X percent, X reps, all the way down. And it's like on a day I feel good, I'm like, nah, I need to do more than that. And I need to add a few reps. And I'm gonna go to failure in the last set. But quite frankly, a lot of the strength days I felt like this is not enough volume, or it's not hard enough. And I swear I did a max day 2 weeks ago and broke like all of my PRs, at 40. I
Because
was
that's
trying
what
to get
he's doing.
20. So
Yeah, because that's what he's doing in the background for you. He's trying to manage that fatigue for you, right?
listen to these workouts, man. They know better than us. I guess that's what I would take away.
All right, something. That's the whole point. Good for you, though, man. That's awesome. Avanti, what about you?
Same thing for me, the stimulating reps, right? And then I remember, like you saying, like, whenever I used to take the sets to failure, I need to observe why am I failing, right? Like the same thing, like, am I failing because of cardiac? Because I remember, like, whenever I used to do split squats or like lunges, I used to fail because I'm running out of breath, right? Not because my muscles are fatigued, right? So I think that's what is very interesting twist on how you can improve your workouts.
Awesome, man. Good to hear. That's great. And Des.
The constant reminder of like stimulating reps is, I think, very important for. I remember Gav's call a couple of weeks ago. He talked about creating like the perfect rep, and I think that when you focus on creating the perfect rep, like all these other things come as a byproduct to that. Like you're more intent, you're like more focused, you're more internal, you're more deliberate, and you increase your range of motion. All these things come as a byproduct if you kind of focus solely on that perfect rep, which I think is a good reminder every time you go
Yeah.
in the gym, if you just try and create that perfect rep.
That's awesome, man. And that's the reason I organized the call like this and talking about like what we're trying to do in the beginning in terms of a setup and then the best set. Because when we look at it like that, then we understand we have a job to do, which is actually work hard, right? Because a lot of people don't do that. What they start is like, I need to squeeze. And they'll just grab an exercise, like a row, and they're like squeezing and they're like squeeze, and then they're going slow, but they're going slow intentionally. That's not a stimulating rep. And we can get into that in a different conversation, but that's the opposite. That's actually an unstimulating rep. You're dropping the amount of muscle because we can all flex our biceps right now. It doesn't do anything, right? But if we actually try to move heavy weight as fast as possible and it doesn't move, that's a stimulating rep. That's where we get into the gold zone, right? So that's awesome, guys. Thank you for sticking around to let me know that. Again, this kind of stuff helps me. Hopefully, we get a bigger crowd, but hopefully I'll be on here again soon so we can kind of take this conversation to the next level.
Thanks, Steve.
Have a good night. I hope this was a good call for you.
Yeah, good stuff. Thank you.